I'm Dr. Ellen Soffen. I'm an anesthesiologist and associate director of research for the Department of Anesthesiology at Hospital for Special Surgery.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jim Beckman. I'm an anesthesiologist and the clinical director of the Department of Anesthesiology at Hospital for Special Surgery.
And we practice in a unique setting in that Hospital for Special Surgery is entirely devoted to the care of patients with musculoskeletal disorders. We specialize in regional anesthesiology and acute pain medicine as they're applied to patients undergoing orthopedic surgery. So in an accompanying segment, we discussed modern multimodal analgesia and how incorporating multimodal analgesia into clinical practice can enhance pain control and improve outcomes. And here we're going to discuss a case that highlights several key points from that discussion. And it also illustrates how to apply multimodal concepts in a practical way. So I'd like to ask Dr. Beckman to present our patient.
So our hypothetical patient is a 52-year-old woman, and she's presenting for an elective anterior-posterior spine fusion. The anterior is what we call an ALIF. It will require a lower abdominal incision. And her symptoms have begun to interfere with her activities of daily living, her enjoyment of life, and sort of interruption of sleep, which is a real problem. She has pain on most days, and she rates it as moderate to severe. And her pain is in her low back and radiates to both legs. She's tried and failed appropriate conservative therapy, including epidural steroid injections and physical therapy. She takes a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, but recently, given her progressive symptoms over the last 6 months, her primary care physician has prescribed her a combination oxycodone-acetaminophen tablet, which she takes about two tablets on the order of 3 to 4 times daily. She also has well-controlled hypertension and hyperlipidemia, constipation, most likely as a result of the opiate medications. And we're seeing her in the pre-surgical screening location, which has been requested by her surgeon prior to anesthesia, secondary to her opiate consumption.
Okay. Is the referral for the opioid use significant here?
It is significant. First of all, by definition, the FDA defines opiate tolerance as the equivalent of 60 milligrams of oral morphine consumed daily for a week. And her consumption is a good bit in excess of that, and it's been going on for months. And we see opiate tolerance not infrequently at Hospital for Special Surgery. Because we're an orthopedic hospital, surgery is often indicated to address a painful condition.
So tolerance can develop rapidly. What problems does tolerance present in the management of this patient's perioperative pain?
Well, a few. First of all, opiate tolerance leads to decreased analgesic effect over time, and that often requires escalation of dose to achieve the same amount of pain control. Connected to this is the concept of OIH, or opiate-induced hyperalgesia. And opiate-induced hyperalgesia is a heightened nociceptive response, or paradoxically, because these patients are on narcotics, they seem to sense things with greater pain than someone not taking narcotics. And this could really present a challenge for dealing with surgical and postoperative pain management.
So this is probably where multimodal analgesia can play an important role throughout the perioperative phase. I think we have several opportunities to exploit multimodal analgesia in this case. First, perhaps most importantly, we have time because this is an elective procedure. And recent data suggests that careful opioid weaning prior to surgery can help to minimize the opioid tolerance and opioid-induced hyperalgesia. So I would start out by recommending an opioid taper for this patient.
How can we safely do that? Because one might be concerned about opiate withdrawal or exacerbating her pain.
And I think those are the two main concerns with starting an opioid taper. So the safest way to do this is in a supervised and controlled fashion with very explicit instructions for the patient. And the goals should be modest, and reductions of even 20% of baseline are associated with improved analgesic outcomes after surgery.
So is there anything else you would change leading up to surgery? How will we control her pain, which seems to be getting worse, that's why she's coming in, if we reduce her opiate consumption?
That's a good question. provided her laboratory values are within normal limits, and in particular her liver function tests and renal function tests, given that she's been taking acetaminophen and a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory for some time, we can maximize the analgesic benefit of the acetaminophen that she already takes as part of her combination opioid therapy. So a strategy for this could be to switch her opioid prescription to oxycodone and increase the dose of acetaminophen. Now, when we do this, patient selection becomes key because some of these changes may be too complicated for some patients. It also means that the patient may have to take more tablets over the course of a day, and some may be unwilling or unable to achieve this.
She's also taking a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drug, and unfortunately, this will be need to be held about 2 weeks in advance of surgery. She seems like a good candidate for a short course of a gabapentinoid, either gabapentin or pregabalin, and both have a pretty good evidence base to support their use for analgesia and opiate-sparing capacity in the setting of spine surgery.
I agree. I would start gabapentin. I would wean the opioid as tolerated, maximize her acetaminophen use, and hold the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory in the 7 to 14 days leading up to her surgery.
That's a reasonable analgesic plan based on the principles of multimodal analgesia. Now, if we move ahead to the day of surgery, let's suppose our patient is in the holding area, and she did well with our preoperative plan, but she didn't take any of her analgesics on the day of surgery because she was concerned or confused about her NPO status on the day of surgery. What would you advise in this circumstance?
This is something that we see fairly commonly. It's easy for patients to become confused about what to take and what to hold. In her case, it's vital that she takes all three of the preoperative analgesics that we had recommended for her. So the opioid, the acetaminophen, and the gabapentin. And this will help preserve the plasma levels of all three of those agents, help avoid withdrawal, and help facilitate her ongoing analgesia.
Okay, so far we've only been using oral agents, and as we're moving from the pre-op to the intraoperative phase, we should have the opportunity to add some additional modalities.
Yes, there are a few intravenous infusions that function very well as part of a balanced anesthetic technique that also have good evidence for postoperative analgesia. We described a few of these in our accompanying segment, but briefly, I think this patient is a good candidate for both ketamine and lidocaine infusions during the surgery. Both are associated with postoperative improvements in pain scores, lower opioid consumption, and minimization of opioid-induced side effects after major orthopedic surgeries performed under general anesthesia. We should also provide her some long-acting agents, and I would consider either methadone or hydromorphone to get her through the surgery and set her up for good pain control when she wakes up after emergence from anesthesia. Depending on the timing, we could also redose her Tylenol intravenously, and steroids have also been shown to be analgesic.
Since multimodal analgesia really advocates for the use of regional anesthesia and analgesia, one would want to consider the anatomy of this particular procedure. And although we're operating on her spine, the anterior approach will require a lower abdominal incision. And I think a tap block, which is a transversus abdominis plane block, would be very useful here. That's a block where, under ultrasound guidance, we insert a needle and inject local anesthetics covering the innervation of the anterior abdominal wall, and that gets us coverage from about the levels of T6 to L1.
Will the tap block provide complete analgesia?
Probably not. The tap block will help with the abdominal wall pain, which can be significant, and it will really chip away at her discomfort as part of a comprehensive multimodal approach. But there will be other post-surgical pain that will require adjuncts such as systemic medications, and we can also add things like dexamethasone to the tap block to help it last for a longer period of time, often days.
This brings us to the recovery phase, and of course, early in the postoperative period, the patient will be nil by mouth. How can we continue our multimodal plan of care?
Well, it's important to stress that opiates, when used judiciously and appropriately, are an essential ingredient of multimodal analgesia, and their early post-op role is essential, and this patient will have some pain and may well benefit from IV opioids. I would probably use an IV PCA with hydromorphone, but also one can push up their oral consumption of medications. There's no reason they have to be absolutely MPO. The goal for her opiate therapy will be to, as quickly as possible, get her back onto what she was on preoperatively.
And I guess in the meantime, the TAP block will be effective, and we can maximize all the other non-opioid pharmacologic options that we have and that we've discussed. There may be effective non-pharmacologic components as well, including heat or cryotherapy.
Absolutely. The final thought I have about this case sort of relates to systems management and ensuring this patient receives multimodal analgesia. We use these pathways as part of an enhanced recovery after surgery system at HSS to promote multimodal analgesia in our patients. Do you think that matters?
I do, and I think these concepts are highly complementary. ERS advocates effective pain control and minimizing opioid reliance. Multimodal analgesia is an approach to pain control that allows us to achieve the same goals. So when multimodal analgesia is formalized into a pathway of care, ERS then becomes a mechanism to help ensure that patients receive the best quality of care that's available based on the best available evidence.
This case demonstrates the rather significant change in our overall paradigm for how we manage anesthesia and analgesia in these patients. And we know that multimodal analgesia is well supported in its beneficial outcomes. We know that multimodal analgesia is really integral as part of ERAS. And multimodal analgesia is not just limited to medications, but the accessibility of ultrasound has really significantly increased some of the procedures we can use to make people comfortable using regional anesthesia. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.